Anything we ought to say?
Master, two or three people asked me this afternoon if I would ask you to explain to them the moral conduct of an initiate.
Yes.
You've gone into that from time to time, but they would like to have a further explanation of it.
I just tell you, I just know, until here just now, that you have to keep a diary up for your self-introspection of all failures. You quit. You have, under several heads I've said, but don't think evil of yours. None of others. Not in thought you. What to speak of in words, angry words. You see? Angry words, you see, first, you are not to think evil, any harming others. If you think that poison affects your body, even by thought. And by words, you use very strong words, very harsh words, not polite, not sweet words. But sweet words don't cost anything. Do they cost anything? But I tell you, the harm done by strong words, harsh words, is never, I think, the effect of that can never be wiped away. And all things happening in our homes, in our societies, in our all affairs, is the result of those harsh words. In India, there is a great war between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. The cause of that was only some harsh words uttered by Draupadi. The sons of the Kauravas dynasty were just going to see Draupadi, one of the Pandavas' wife. So just the building in which she was living, there is a flow just from the distance, it appeared like water. It reflected like water. The poor fellows coming over there, they saw it as well, they just throw up. And you see this, their father was blind man from birth, Koro. She simply said, look here, after all you are born as the son of a blind man, that was only a few words. And that was the cause of a big Mahabharata, big war. From there it is stated the troops from the America also went there to fight. They stated over there, from the Netherlands, that is America, the other side of the world. They went over there, fighting 17 days of all civilization in India was gone. That began with one word of Draupadi. Similar at our home for Pisa. This only thing. We said, oh yes, if you cut it with a sword something, that, you see, wound will be healed in, say, a week, 2 weeks. But the wound struck by your tongue will not heal even for hours. Oh, he told me, I cannot forget that. These are failures, you see. They speak sweet words. Always polite. There are ways and ways to express things. You cannot, all I do this, you must do this. Cannot be otherwise. Why don't you come on? This and that. You can, all right, dear friend, we have to cope with this work. We all of us have to do. Let us cope with it. There's no other body to do it. We all have the same cause before us. The same very sweet words will just bring any man with you to help you, cooperate with you. Those sweet words don't cost anything. Harsh words. Also, just telling bad names on the back of it, you see. You say, so such man is like and that and that. Such man is doing this thing. But these things also affect the heart. With these things, how can you go on correctly with your meditation? You cannot. To guard your tongues. You see? You sweet words. One angry word, you see, can create a war in each household, I say. If you put in some sweet words, there's consolation, there's peace, there's harmony, there's compassion. And in deed, if you just strike somebody, it is too much. So you have to guard, you see, the failures under non-violence. One that today you have done, how much under these adding failures? What you have done today, guard against that tomorrow. And weed out from day to day. Second thing will come truth, always adhere to truth. The falsehood, acting, posing, you see, hypocrisy, stealing others' rights, when they knowingly above board or under board, these are to be avoided. Chaste life, not to have lusty thoughts even in thought. If you think of something from head to down to the bottom, you feel that way. Your body is poisoned, you see. Sometimes people say, well, we don't do anything, simply enjoy by saying certain things. When you utter such like things, even that poison goes into the body, is it not? But actual conviction, you have to just come up to the standard as prescribed by your sacrament service. Marriage is a sacrament. Not a life, a sensuous life, to live sensuous life, not the ideal of a married man, my dad. One duty is there too, for procreation, for children. It's only to be used for the purpose of procreation. This is word, deed and thought. Similar word is imminent in every form, resides in all hearts. You must have love for all. Hate it for none. Sometimes we think we are superior. We are in positions to drag other sides. You see, higher officers can say, these are my smart, all right, sit down. Why you do this and that? Even our president considers in a society my order must be obeyed. Secretary says, oh, why? I am the senior, but I must have this and that. Each man in his own position, you see, asserts. And the result is aversion, hatred. You have no love for others. You see? If you have love for others, your position won't mind. You treat others with equal love. I tell you my position in life, you see, my official career. I thought all were equal. Some is sitting in the chair, in the officer's, on the officer table, the other is that like PM, like he's working over the table. What difference is there? God has equally endowed him with the same things as you are endowed. Simply the position in life comes according to reaction of the past karma. Unfortunate friends working over there. You treat them, you see, just as equals. They are after all friends. If you use kind words that affect them more than even by giving your orders, they will do obey at times, but at heart of hearts, you cannot, you see, attack their hearts. I think the other day I mentioned one case, appealed to him to my, I was in administration charge, you see, in coordination work, that's a very hard job, you know. I had 35 officers to work with me and I had to just give orders to be carried out one by all, you see. So one peer came to me today. I was to retire from service on day after tomorrow. He was 2 days with me. Third day, and he was to be off the duty. Control order, all men can leave off work and just see him off, you see. That peer, I saw that peer, he was in tears, crying like that. I told him, my dear friend, that this might have seen something of me. What has he seen of me in 2 days? He says, I know you are considered young men. You treat us like men. Equality, you see, is the law of nature. If you just start from equal, you'll be respected. Any command given by you, any order given by you will be done with the heart and soul. When I was in office, I had about 700 establishments under me working, you see. with 35 officers. I had to do the administration coordination. The outer of all the offices was splendidly good. All your notes coming from government for one reason or the other, so many proposals, and government offices go on, you see. When I left office, three officers were placed in my job. Three officers to carry out the job I was doing single-handed. And of course with cooperation of everybody, you see. I used to mark anything to somebody, whether that work belonged to him or not, he used to go to the other section, do it and submit himself. And say, well, all right, this has to be done. I will leave the office and they will do even sitting after midnight. They will complete it, yes. That was so much cooperation I had, you see. Even from the Mohammedans over there, there were two very bad days, those days, Muslim days, just before the, I mean, this Pakistan affair took place, but they would not refuse, you see. When they came away, I on leave pending retirement, I went to the secretary after that Delhi, there was one finance minister, I mean, and financial advisor over there, he was my friend, I went to see him. At the very moment I appeared to him, he said, well, look young, what has happened to the office? He never knew that I was on leave for the last 3 months. What has happened to office? Why? Well, now all your notes, unofficial sentence, that not one of them has returned so far in the last 3 months. Before they used to come back in a week or so. With the best proposals over there, suggestions over there. The outcome has gone down to 1/4 that 3 months before. What has it become around to the office? I told him, well, dear, that I am away, I don't know, I am sending retirement. So that was due to the cooperation, you see, to the sweet temperament and the loving treatment with the establishment, you see. They told me, look here, when you go away, do you think I will give them work, turn out work for them? And they did so. So sweet words don't cost anything, even if you are in superiority, established, say, by some reason or the other, you are in a high position, you got under your establishment, well, love them, they are men of God, treat them as men. They are failures. I used to do what, you see, in my office, sections declare certain class quite unfit for work. They should be discharged. Because I was an administration, I used to receive them in my, keep them in my own section for 2 or 3 months. First I would see what they do. 2, 3, 4 days for a week I'd watch them, what they were doing. So they were simply sneaking away not to do the work habits there. Then someday I would just ask them, well, look your dear friend, in the evening, all alone, look your dear friend, are you going to be paid for the job you are working here? Yes. Well, either you don't work, how people would like you here? Here you can take no mercy on yourself, why not take mercy on the children you have got? I appeal to his sense. So he was a bit changing. In 2 or 3 months he was up to the mark. Again, when those people wanted some clerks to help them, I posted them there. They said, no, we won't have this clerk. I would tell them, well, he is now a chain clerk. He is. You see? So by kind words, sweet words, don't cost anything. You can have full cooperation by all men whom you treat as sweetly as possible. They are after all equal men. Suppose you are interested in charge of something, a bit man. So he wants, if cooperation, he should work equally. No doubt, I am giving you some responsibility to carry on some work. You see, that does not give you any control, physical control of the bodies. You are equal workers. You have been selected. You are fortunate. Let others also think you are fortunate. For the sake of administration to carry on work, in a very effective way, we have to give some duty to somebody. The duty of the others lie in just doing in the as best a way as possible what he thinks best, what he is given orders. But at times, sometimes, we may have got difference of feeling. You see? In that case, we are not to, what you say, crow over others. No, I would not do this, I would not do that. You simply think of calmly over the matter, what is what. Suppose one man is there, he has to do certain job, you see? And he does not receive cooperation from others, naturally he would be a little upset. He would say, oh, I'll get you that, even these people don't say, all right, you come on. But there are ways and ways even to express those things, I say, you see? Because it is a common cause between us, you see? This is our household affair. If we are fighting one against the other, that is a bad example to others. For both, they see you fighting over there, you see? That will be a bad example for them. They do not know what is the cause. You may be right, you may be wrong. But the best way out, just like for both, the man who is in charge of the show, he has to see that something is done. Suppose one of you do not agree to that, out of the, say, 10, 12, 50 men. So one or two or 10 men do not agree, that does not mean that they should be wrong. They should give in to the majority, opinion of the majority. And if they should not assert Rakika Prabhu in absence or in front, that I do not agree, we must submit. I quoted you one instance of the late Prime Minister, I mean, of England when he came to America. He said, all right, my government has done correctly. So my point is like that, not to support anything wrong, no doubt, but still if there is any difference of opinion, we should not assert and stand up, go against, talk in the absence, you see? That gives harm to the cause of the work which you are, which is before you. The man ordering, who is in charge, he should also be sweet and loving in his expressions, and those others who do not agree with this something, and there is, I think, I tell you, you can refer to me where you are not at one, you see? You cannot come to any conclusion. There's no question of aggravating each other's feelings, but simply to refer that case to me, also, and continue as sweet as ever. Such like things do happen, you see, in opposite every phase of life. I'll see. But this is the best way to meet with it that way, I'm just now suggesting, you see. You simply give in. All right, this is a matter I think we are not all agree, refer that case to such and such. I think here there has been one of the big cause of this chartering business, I tell you. Somewhere in far this, the others were against it. Both of them were sincere in their efforts, I don't reflect on them. Each one wanted something to be done so that that may be helping in the long run to our work. Both were sincere, but they did difference of opinion. Some sided with one man, the other sided with the other. They were like a row. Though not openly yet, at times also openly, and at times going on rumbling under the ground.
What is the best thing?
I just, here, have the patience here. So, that case was offered to me. I asked for opinion of everybody who were concerned as representatives. I had all together. I thought of it. Well, I told you, all right, when I come, this will be decided. Yeah, we had a talk, I think everybody was satisfied. The same purpose was served by both of them. Those who were for it, their purpose was also served. And those who were not for it, their name was also served. You see? That is to have branches out here. That's the way they had over there in India. Finish. So my point, there are ways and ways. There may be difference of opinion. For that difference of opinion, we should not aggravate each other's feelings. If we are fighting like anything within ourselves, what is this? This is a bad example for others. You may think you got some of the highest things before you, and the other people will see otherwise, you are behaving other way. I am speaking, each one of you mind that. I don't mean any one man or the representative or the others, for all of you, individually. If one man has, for instance, we cannot wipe out hatred by hatred, my brother. We have to wipe out hatred by love. If one man has heard, all right, the other should not have. That can be softened up. In a coffee, one common God, what there you are, say, 50, 100 people over here. It is not an issue of thousands of people, humans, for one common cause. Disinterest is God, I will say, we have not got any personal interest in it, except one common cause for which each one of us has to work. You see? We don't be washing down. We should look to the name of the cause you are taking up. We spoil the name, which you cannot retrieve in, excuse me, in years, but you spoil in moments. Just follow the true import of the spirit I'm talking, you see. I'm not blaming anybody. But I'm also not supporting anybody who fails in that state. I love for all of you. The slight difference may be here and there, for that reason we should not agree with our feelings. We have to cooperate for one God. For instance, I am coming here. Do you see, I may tell today, what was the main cause I did not turn up last year? Underlying, I had something before me, place just to place. Before me, as I am not coming this year, I was after the ground should be more prepared. South ground was not prepared at the time, as it is a bit better now, but still with some rumbling at it underneath. So I wish to wash out that. I was playing in detail to Jonah and Khanna. You see, I have respect for him, and you should also have respect for him. As in charge. You are placed in their place, naturally you have to watch the smooth going of the whole thing. It is a duty, sort of duty. If you don't receive any cooperation from anybody, naturally you see the things are going wrong, he may be at times upset. Now as a rule, should not be upset, but with all that imperfections are there in each and everybody is not perfect, still may have here and there, for one common cause, for the helping that thing to go smoothly, for that it may be, if you do receive equal cooperation without any, there's no need for any harshness, no strong words in use. Suppose if anybody else is put in that job, if they don't receive full cooperation, then the difficulty or not? That the same difficulty will confront you also, and therein. So my words, you see, my sweet words, full of humility, devotion and love, for one common cause, there is no superiority. Of course, superiority in that respect, because they are given certain job to do, to watch it goes on smoothly and effectively. For that thing, if at all anything is suggested, let us do, submit for the moment, and if we do not agree, in that case we might submit. In that respect we do not. We should not fight. No harsh words to be exchanged. Submit and the matter then will have to. In the meantime there should be no aggravation. This much I still feel there was something like that. I hope this will wipe out, you see, wash away. What is past, that cannot be unmended now, for the future. If you go by like that, I think everything will be smooth and all right. This is one respect of the position I am telling you, see. Love for all. Because we had some little difficulty over here, and we had no time to talk between ourselves. I had this opportunity to talk to you. I'm giving detail more explicitly on the subject, so there may be left no misunderstanding. What is past. We are brothers as ever. We should love for another. Always use sweet words. You see? we have to do something, or if brothers come and we have to do this, cooperate. Everybody will. Every saint will cooperate. This is one thing, sometimes we think we know too much on account of our, what you say, intellectual attainment. I am a man of degrees, he knows little. These things also sometimes become the cause of aggravation. Similarly, look, a man is reading the primary. Just like one man is reading, say, reading in college. If a college man, student, expects a man reading the primary to talk up to the level of which he has reached, and he ever expected, he should have pity, love for the man. He was sometimes like that. And that when he is given full, proper help and guidance, he can also come up to that. Even if you are speedy in your intellectual attainment, even then you love us. Without the faults, shortcomings. And ultimately, on account of wealth, you may be in possession of much wealth. You are a very rich man, the other is poor. For that reason also, he is the man. Again I will say he is man. He is God's soul, equally privileged man, I would say. You see? We should have love for them. Love for all. Any failures under that respect should be. I remember in the beginning, once in my official career, I just addressed some peon. Oh, that was a bit not very harsh word, but still something not very equal. That struck my heart. Yes. I put it in writing on my table. Use not such lightly. You see? Then selfless service comes, you see. For selfless service you do, we have to sacrifice something. Both physically and also, say, by wealth. Physically you have to give time. There is a common cause for working. All should cooperate well, all it. Let me have my share, I will help. Willing. You should come forward. Don't leave the burden on one man or two. If the same work is done by one or two, when the same work is shared by, say, 10-20 men, quite easy it becomes. So selfless service physically also helps a good deal. With that, your mind is pure, purified. Somebody is sick, you have to attend, go and attend selflessly. You need some help for the common cause, go together all of you. The same work we've done in no time. I tell you, when we started building up the ashram at Delhi, we said, I want to do it here, I tell you. There we raised about 30 rooms, leveled the ground which was full of mounds and just broken ground. And all this was accomplished in 1 month and a half. Think, what was I doing? I was doing also the laborer's work, you see, one of the laborers. The people said, no, you should not. I told, I am a man like you, I must, why not? I did once, example in battle that precept, thousands followed to do it, they got it. Selfless service is one thing, you see. If any failure you see, there is something wanting, you are just not paying any heed, just sneaking away from taking care out of that willingly. Fortunate times such like arise in life, otherwise you think you may be seeking for such like occasions and do not get such. Even in life, you see, in which you can just extend your physical health. Self work by physical, self work. As also with money. You should just maintain your bodies, maintain your families, some portion of it, how little it may be, just spend it for the hungry, for the unclothed, and for the common cause where people can have spiritual benefit. If you follow these things, along with your regular practice in an accurate way, you are sure to have problems.
Good morning and welcome to the satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you listened to was the second part of a longer recording that began with meditation instructions. This portion is on the moral conduct of an initiate. It was given on June 10, 1955 in Washington, D.C. Our reader this morning is Eileen Picorni. Hello, Eileen.
Good morning, everyone. This morning, we will be reading from The Wheel of Life, starting from the introduction. And this was a talk given by Kirpal Singh at Kirpal Ashram in Vermont, October 12, 1963. And it was entitled Justice and Grace. There is a law of justice and there is a law of grace. Both of them, they are both laws. It is just like when you light a candle. The light is above and the darkness below. If you have a bulb, then the light is below and the darkness above. So both are the laws working in the world. Sowing a seed, that's a point to be understood. When you sow a seed, it will bring forth similar seeds. There is action, reaction, then again a reaction, and the thing goes on like that. There's no end to it. After sowing the grain, a man cannot stop having the harvest. The fruit will come. So there are many actions. Actions are of one kind, but there are three aspects to them. There are certain actions which we are doing now, daily, fresh actions. Fresh seeds are sown, you might say. Some have already been sown and are bearing fruit. Others have been sown, but are not yet bearing forth fruit. So there are three kinds of karmas or actions. Our present life depends on those reactions of the past karmas, which are bearing fruit. They are called prarabdha karmas. On that karma, our length of life is based. According to that, some people get children, some die, some are ugly, some are old, some have a give and take. This is based on those karmas or seeds which have grown in the past and are now bearing forth fruit in action. This you cannot change. When a railroad line is laid down, the train will run over it. Before you lay down any railroad line, it is up to you to lay it down this way or that way. But once it's laid down, the train will have to run over it. So, as I told you, some karmas are bearing fruit, some we are doing fresh, and others have not yet borne any fruit. That will come in due course. So we are independent within certain limits to do some actions, and we are also bound to some extent. Action, reaction, action, reaction goes on. There's no end to it. When a master meets someone, he does not touch the present reactions, which are coming up, for our life is based on that. He lets it alone. He lets it go on. But he does two things. For the future, he lays down a line of conduct beyond which we should not transcend. Don't think evil of anybody, even in mind, not to speak of in word or deed. Be truthful, even in mind. Don't think up anything wrong. Acting and posing, scheming, polishing, doing something underground, and then above board doing something else. And further, be chaste, even in mind, word, and deed, and have love for all, because all men are alike. They have the same privileges that each one of us has. So love all, because God is in the hearts of all, whether they are rich or poor, whether they are learned or unlearned. They all have the same privileges from God that you have. Also, do not hate others, even in mind, word, or deed. And further, when you are to love God and love all humanity, then you must give self-service, not selfish service. For love knows service and sacrifice. Selfish service will again cause a reaction to come. If you serve selflessly for the sake of God and others, then that won't bear forth fruit. As for the present actions, which are having reactions, these are also softened down, or polished down, you might say, by the Master. How? By giving some bread of life to your soul, so that your soul becomes strong. Suppose a fight is going on. One man is very weak, and the others are strong. They've come to blows, and this and that thing. The one poor fellow who is very weak gets one blow and is stunned. He cries out, "I am killed." And the others who are strong say, "We don't mind. We have had so many blows, but we don't care a fig for it." Why is this? Because they are strong. Reactions do come up, but for those who have strong souls, who have had the bread of life, they lose their pinching effect. For the future, Master lays down a line of conduct. For the present, which is bearing fruit, he gives food to the soul so that it will become strong and there will not be any pinching effect. And for those which are not yet bearing forth fruit, he gives the disciple a contact with God within. By coming in contact with God within, when his inner eye is open, he sees that he is the doer of all, that we are mere puppets in his hands. He becomes a conscious co-worker of the divine plan. The result is that there is no I-hood left, and all those actions which were sown in the past and are still awaiting fruit are burned away. Who is there to bear their fruit? So this is the way in which you can escape from the reactions of the past. If you say, "Oh, I can do this and that," with a little I-hood in it, so long as you are the doer, you have to bear the reactions of it. Where no doer is left, then God is the doer. You are absolved. There is a story given in the Quran, the scripture of the Mohammedans. There was once a saint who from his very childhood had left the world to reside in a jungle. Here, fortunately, you find enough water, electricity, and everything else. But there was nothing like that. For miles and miles around there was no water and nothing to eat. So he used to pray to God, and God made some arrangements to take care of him. One small spring sprouted forth, and from that very sweet water was flowing. And he used to drink water from that. And they say there was a pomegranate tree, and each day one pomegranate was born by the tree. He used to eat that pomegranate and drink that water and pass his days. It is said there, after long, long years, 70 or 80 years, he died. He was presented to the court of God. God looked at him. "All right, we forgive you as a matter of grace." His eyes opened wide. "Well, all through life I've been killing myself doing this sort of penance and that sort of penance, And with all that, I am being forgiven as a matter of grace, as an act of grace only? In his heart of hearts, he thought perhaps that a very great injustice was being done. God read his mind and said, "Well, would you like us to make an account of your actions?" "Yes, you may, please." At heart, he wanted it. "All right, look here. In that jungle, there is no water for miles and miles altogether. One spring was created there, only for you, especially for you. And there was a pomegranate tree. Each day, it bore one big pomegranate. No tree can bear forth one fruit daily. So that is your compensation for all you've done. Now, let us account for your other actions. You were walking along the way and some insect died, trampled down under your feet. You must be trampled down as you trampled down. Further, you did this and that." And the saint thought that perhaps matters have gotten worse and said, "All right, please excuse me, forgive me, if you would like to. Masters come not to break the law, but to fulfill the law as a matter of redemption by grace, not as action-reaction. Guru Nanak says, with actions, you can have reactions. As you sow, so shall you reap. But redemption comes only by grace. All masters say so. Of course, it does not mean we should be vicious. We should restrict ourselves according to the commandments the masters have given us. Another thing, a father has a child who does not obey him. He commits some offense, something like that. What would the father do? Would he send him to the police? I don't think so. No father would permit his son to be sent to the police. He may slap him once or twice, but he wouldn't send him to the police. So similarly, when you come to the Master, the God in him, you are all his children. He doesn't send you on the regular course to bear fruit of what you have sown. That's a concession. Otherwise, how long would you continue like that? First there's a seed, and then there's the tree. Then there are many seeds, and again a tree. Is the egg before the hen, or the hen before the egg? Where is the end? So it's a matter of redemption by grace. It is something like that. It is so that you can understand it. Unless you become a conscious co-worker of the divine plan, there is no escape, no emancipation. As you sow, so shall you reap. That goes on like that for aeons and aeons of time. Question: do we have to work off all on this physical plane, all the karma that we have, like the B type of karma that we're working off in this life? What about the things that we are doing now or have done in this lifetime? What if we're not all finished by the time we die? Master: I think I have replied to you and you have not followed it. When you become a conscious co-worker of the divine plan, when you become selfless, who will bear whatever actions you have done? Furthermore, that is why all masters say, be desireless. Master tries to wind up all your reactions of the past, just as I told you, by giving you strength, by giving the bread of life to your soul, so that the reactions which are coming up will not be pinching to you. But he doesn't touch them. Otherwise, as soon as a man was initiated, he would die. For that reason, they are not touched. For the future, he lays down a line of conduct. For the past, If you become selfless, a conscious co-worker, then nothing will come up. Guru Nanak says, O Master, what is the use of coming to your feet if, when coming here, we still have to bear fruit of all the actions which we have done in the past? He gives an example. What is the use of going to the feet of a lion if still jackals come and howl at you? So that is a great blessing. Now the question may arise, what is a master? A master is a man like you. Each one of us has the same privileges. The difference lies only in the fact that although God resides in every heart, in the heart of a master, he is now manifest. Master is a conscious co-worker. That is, he's doing it. It is not he who is speaking, but the God in him who is speaking. He becomes a mouthpiece of God. We can also become mouthpiece of God. Every saint has his past, and every sinner a future. How has he become the mouthpiece of God? The man who has reached that stage can also give you the same thing. On the very first day, when he initiates you, he withdraws and drags your soul above body consciousness and gives you a contact with the light and sound principle of God. That is the way back to the ultimate, absolute God. When you become quite conscious of all that, you see that it is he that is doing, not I. So when all reactions are finished, it is just like having a few grains of seeds which have been roasted in the oven. Even if you sow them, they will not bear forth fruit. They will not grow. It's something like that. And that concludes the introduction. And we will be going to chapter 1. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. That's from the Galatians. Confronted with the complexities of earthbound life, man struggles for a way out. Wherever he turns, he finds his upward flight thwarted by unseen barriers. Why all the seeming inequalities in the world? Why is man's way blocked to his primal home, the home of his heavenly Father? Why cannot man redeem his unknown path? Where should he turn for the saving light of the pure science of being? These queries lead the inquiry mind to an investigation of the universal law of action and reaction. The term karma frequently appears in various Indian philosophical and religious writings. Indeed, it has been so bandied about by priests and preachers that it may have come to consider that it's an imaginary stumbling block in the path of spiritual salvation. Being a term foreign to the West, usually it passes on without sufficient clarification. All the masters of the lower reaches or grades of ascent speak of liberation through performing action without attachment to and desire for the fruit or result thereof. This, however, is but a partial truth and halfway knowledge. The mind is accustomed to taste the fruit of its actions. How will it give up this habit? Sadhanas, that i.e. mental and physical exercises, may be employed as instruments to discipline the mind to a certain extent. But in the long run, the mind's habit of enjoying its experiences will assert itself. The mind can give up worldly pleasures only when it gets some kind of higher pleasure. The saints have experienced a far more exquisite pleasure, ecstatic bliss, by contact with Nam, the Word of God, or the Divine Sound Principle. Once absorbed in this sound current, or Nam, the mind is drawn away from the world. The mind has a habit of running after worldly objects and of jumping from one thing to another. What we have to do, then, is not to stop its flux, which is but a natural characteristic, but to only turn its direction from downwards into the world outside to upwards into the world within. This means harnessing the wandering wits and channeling the mental energy into a proper course, as it would ensure results that are of lasting and permanent nature. This comes through regular practice or absorption in Nam. This is the only method by which the mind may gradually be trained and ultimately rendered innocuous with sublimitation of the mental currents. The soul comes to its own and can proceed unencumbered and unhampered on its way to its original source, the Oversoul or the All-Soul. Thus, the saints who have themselves trodden this path, the path of Sarit Shabd Yoga, absorption in the Holy Word or Sacred Sound, can also not only enable us to free ourselves from the karmic cycle of action and reaction, but also provide us an access into the kingdom of God, which lies within. Now the question arises, how can the karmas be wound up or rendered ineffective? In the labyrinth of the laws of nature in which we are involved, there is an outlet provided for those who are really in search of self-knowledge and God-knowledge. The access to this outlet, or the way out of the dense jungle of karmas, spreading far back to immemorial past, is made manifest by the saving grace of the true master. Once he has taken us in his fold and contacted us with the eternal holy word or sound current, we are put out of the reach of Yama or the angel of death, representing the negative aspect of the supreme power and the dispenser of justice in the universe, to each according to his actions. Every act of a living being done knowingly or unknowingly, irrespective of whether it is yet in the stage of latency or in thought form, a mental vibration, or is uttered by words or mouth, or is actually done by a physical act, constitutes karma. Lest the reader get confused by the term karma, it is better to understand this word in its proper context. Originally, the word karma stood for and represented sacrificial rites and rituals and yajnas performed by individuals as prescribed by the sacred texts. Later on, however, it came to include all kinds of virtues, social and self-purifying, like truthfulness, purity, abstinence, continence, ahimsa, universal love, selfless service, and all deeds of charitable nature. In short, a great stress was laid on the cultivation of atam gunas, which tend to discipline the mind and divert the mental powers in the right direction so as to serve the higher purpose of liberating Atman or the spirit in bondage. Karmas are generally classified as prohibited, permitted, and prescribed. All karmas that are degrading and derogatory in nature are classified as prohibited because indulgence in vices is sinful and the wages of sin are death. These are termed kukarmas or vikarmas. Next come karmas that are upgrading and help a person in attaining higher planes or paradise. These are sukarmas, that is, karmas performed for fulfillment of one's benevolent desires and aspirations, as such are permissible and therefore permitted. Finally, we have karmas, the performance of which are considered obligatory, as enjoined by the scriptures for persons belonging to different varnas or social orders, or the priestly class engaged in study and teaching of scriptures, the warrior race consisting of fighting forces for purpose of defense, or the people engaged in commercial or agricultural pursuits, and the people serving the foregoing three classes. And at different stages in one's life called ashrams, correspondingly roughly to the formidable period of one's education, the stage of married life as a householder, the ascetic stage of a recluse or hermit engaged in deep meditation in the solitude of a forest, and lastly, the stage of a spiritual pilgrim giving to the people the fruit of his lifelong experience, each portion being of 25 years, computing the lifespan to be of 100 years duration. These are called Netya karmas, or karmas, the performance of which is a must for each from day to day in his vocation and period of life. As a code of moral conduct, the law of karma makes valuable contributions to man's material and moral well-being on earth and paves the way to a better life in the future. In all four spheres of human life, secular, material, or economic, religious, and spiritual, as denoted by the terms kama, fulfillment of one's desires, artha, economic and material well-being, dharma, moral and religious base upholding and supporting the universe, and moksha, salvation, deeds or karmas, they play a vital part. It is, of course, the moral purity that figures as a motivating force for attaining success in one's endeavors. In order that the karmas bear the desired fruit, it is necessary that they be performed with single-minded and purposeful attention and loving devotion. I have come to the end of my time, and we will stop there. And we were reading from The Wheel of Life. We read the introduction, and we are reading the first chapter. And we will continue reading the next time. Thank you, Master, for this wonderful satsang.
And thank you, Eileen, for your gracious reading of Master's valuable words. There were 81 participants at today's satsang. Thank you, Master, for bringing us together to strengthen our loving devotion to you.
If you have been rescued this man's body, by the grace of God, we enable you to go back to your home. But remain here, pay off your debts, give them takes, you see, and find your way back to God.